Hi, welcome to Journey of the Monkey King, chapter by chapter discussion of Journey to the West. I'm Griva, and as always, I'm joined by my friend MJ.
Hello!
Should I like try and do a different intro? I basically say the same thing every time.
I mean, if you want.
I don't know what,
you can check in, we could talk about how we are. You never ask me how I am, Griva.
I always ask you how you are, it's just before we start recording.
I don't know. I my podcast is a famously fucked up introduction.
Yeah.
So it's I stretch several metaphors and then I go, it's a podcast. I enjoy it.
Okay. Well, we're going on to chapter 13. Or no, sorry, we're not. We are. I was editing chapter 13 earlier.
Be nice to her. She had a head injury. How is that, by the way? How's the bruising?
Oh, I'm fine now.
Yay!
Like, if I press a really specific part of my face or my knees, they're slightly tender, but that's it.
So no permanent side effects apart from the desire to design really stylish earrings.
Not that I've noticed.
They're very stylish.
You can't see them.
I
drilled a hole in a micro SD card adapter and put a fish hook in it. And that's my new earring. Just literally.
It's cool though.
Just literally an SD card.
It's stylish and practical.
Chapter 15, though, is going to feature animal death again and.
Of course!
Various threats of violence.
Cool.
So it's midwinter, and Tributak and Sun Wukong are on the road. They're crossing the Serpent Coil Mountain when they come to the Eagle Grief Stream. It's called the Eagle Grief Stream because the surface is so smooth that it acts like a mirror, and eagles sometimes think their reflections are other birds and fly into the stream and drown.
I was about to say that's actually kind of adorable, and then the drowning happened. So this is, eagles are just particularly greasy creatures, and all the grease just floats up. And
No, grief.
Oh.
Eagle okay. Grief.
Because when you said eagle grease, and before you got to the horrible part, which I am sure is not the animal death content warning or what that was referring to.
Yeah, there'll be others, but yeah, I guess.
Of course, there is.
You know, it encompasses that too.
But I kind of pictured them trying to land on it a little bit and then kind of doing a flailing about with their with their talons and kind of going whoop, kind of very, very slapstick. But no, they drown.
Yeah.
Cool. What was this guy's problem with animals?
But it's I don't know. It's because it's like so perfectly smooth and calm. It's beautiful. And then birds die.
Yeah, even the most beautiful things will kill somebody.
Yeah, so
yeah.
The two of them come to the riverside and they look into the water themselves. And as they do, a massive dragon surges out of the water and rushes at them. Monkey manages to throw down the luggage, grab Tripitaka, and get him away, but the dragon swallows their horse whole. That's the animal death.
How many horses are they going to go through?
No, this is a one horse they've had from the start.
Yeah, but I can kind of see this being a theme. I can kind of see this happening a lot. That horse went through a lot as well, in fairness. That horse was a survivor, and I think he deserved a better end than this.
Yeah, I don't know how it survived the ordeal with the ogres, because it fell into the pit as well. I guess they just weren't interested in eating a horse. I guess they just let it go.
Yeah, they're ogres, not Frenchmen.
Or the gold star Venus magically intervened to save the horse off screen and it just wasn't mentioned, God knows.
Yeah. I wanted to imagine that there was someone looking out for that horse.
But they don't actually see the horse getting eaten. So when they return to grab the luggage, they look around for it and they can't find it anywhere. Monkey leaps into the air and looks all around for it, but obviously doesn't find it. Tripitaka asks him to have another look, but Wukong insists he could spot a dragonfly within 1,000 miles. The horse is definitely gone. It must have been eaten. Tripitaka despairs at the idea of having to walk all the way to India without a horse, and he starts crying.
Well, he has had a long couple of days now, in fairness.
Yeah, well, I think they've been on the road for a good while now, actually, but I think there hasn't been major incidents since the last chapter, with a while.
I'm sort of seeing that as, you know, you've had a really, really long and stressful week, both at work and just filled with interpersonal conflict. It's just been a million tiny things. You're PMSing and you drop a cup and suddenly you're just like in floods of tears.
Yeah, it's pretty reasonable it's a pretty reasonable circumstance to get upset. Although it's not the horse he's crying over, it's just him having...
It's everything! Him.
So, Wukong gets annoyed at this, and he tells Tripitaka basically to stop being a wimp and to wait here while he goes to confront the dragon and sort it out. But Tripitaka objects to this, asking him who'll protect him while Wukong goes and does that. Wukong calls him a weakling and asks him, does he just want to sit here and grow old watching their bags? The shouting is interrupted by the arrival of a group of deities. They introduce themselves as the six gods of darkness, the six gods of light, the guardians of the five points, the four sentinels, and the 18 protectors of the monasteries. They were sent by Bodhisattva Guanyin to offer secret protection to Tripitaka, which, lads, you've already fucked that up by just introducing yourselves.
Yeah, I feel like the protection as well was a bit... Also, he's got a hell of an entourage.
Yeah, but yeah, they're going to be offering round-the-clock protection to Tripitaka in shifts, starting with the gods of darkness and light. They're not all on duty all the time. They do have shifts. They alternate. They have a proper schedule sorted out.
Okay, cool. Like a roster.
Yeah. So
that's good.
Monkey says grand. Everyone whose shift it isn't can head off in a second, but asks a few of them to stay with Tripitaka for a bit while he confronts the dragon.
Okie doke.
So he flies over to the river and starts shouting, return my horse, down at the water. This pisses off the dragon and he attacks again, and they fight for a long time. The Monkey King with his iron rod and the dragon with his claws. Eventually, the dragon starts to get tired and retreats back to the bottom of the stream. Monkey keeps shouting insults down at him, but the dragon ignores them.
And he's not really going to get the horse back, is he?
No, and Sun Wukong isn't so good in water, so he can't really think of anything else at the moment, so he just goes back to Tripitaka, who says back to him, that time you killed the tiger, you claimed you had the ability to tame dragons and subdue tigers. Why can't you subdue this one today? Monkey has no adequate answer for this and just storms off again and goes back to the river.
He's picking his battles. That horse is not coming back. We all need to move on with our lives.
No, he insists on going back and showing the dragon who's boss.
Of course he does.
So he uses the magic of overturning seas and rivers to turn the clear stream into a muddy torrent, which drives the dragon back out of the water. The dragon thinks to himself, it's been barely a year since I was almost executed, and now this wretched monster is trying to attack me. He jumps out at Wukong and shouts at him, what kind of monster are you, and where did you come from that you want to oppress me like this? And Monkey shouts back, never mind where I come from, just return the horse and I'll spare your life. I ate the horse, what am I meant to do?
Yeah, right? The question on everyone's lips.
If you don't
How do you return an eaten horse?
Wukong just ignores this question.
Of course.
He just says, if you don't give back the horse, you'll pay for it with your life instead. So they fight for another while, but the dragon can't win. He turns into a tiny water snake and wriggles into the long grass to hide. Wukong tries to find it, but he can't, and he gets so mad that smoke literally starts shooting out his ears, and also from everywhere else. The book literally says that smoke starts to come out from his seven apertures.
Mm-hmm. So he's not one's blowing smoke up his ass, but it's coming out anyway. I don't know. I could probably have done something better with that, to be honest.
It's okay. So Wukong says a prayer that summons the local spirit and the local mountain god, and he threatens to beat them up just to take his anger out on them. I genuinely think he's has like way worse anger issues after the imprisonment.
Well, you would. To be honest, you would. Mm. I don't imagine that being stuck under a mountain for several centuries.
Yeah.
Is very good for your emotional growth as a person.
No, it's not at all.
Mm-mm.
So they offer him information if he spares them. And so he asks them, where did this dragon come from and why it ate his master's horse? The two spirits, first of all, know who Sun Wukong is, and they are shocked to hear him calling someone master.
Ooh.
But they tell him that the dragon was actually told to wait here by Guanyin until a scripture pilgrim arrives. Do you remember the Aaron's son? That Guanyin got a stay of execution for?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is him.
Ah.
So he's actually been here waiting for them to arrive.
Okay, interesting. And was the instruction eat the horse, or was it just kind of like, oh man, I've been here for ages, there's a horse, I might as well.
Yeah, so, well, Wukong can't find the dragon to sort this out anymore. He doesn't have a clue where it's managed to hide. So the two spirits suggest going to Guanyin herself to ask for help. So he goes back to Tripitaka to report this. But when the golden-headed guardian, which is just one of the gods that was,
on babysitting duty.
Yeah. So when the golden-headed guardian hears about it, he offers to go to the Potalaka Mountain himself to get her. So
he does not like being disturbed.
Who doesn't?
Guanyin.
Oh. Yeah, no, she's... So he arrives, and Moksha is there, and he announces him, and Golden-Headed Guardian explains what's going on with the dragon to Guanyin, and she's just kind of baffled. So the dragon was meant to act as transportation for Tripitaka, not eat his transportation. So she agrees to head over herself back to the Serpent Coil the Serpent Coil Mountain to sort it out.
Okay.
So as soon as she arrives, Wukong lays into her. You so-called teacher of the seven Buddhas and founder of the Faith of Mercy, why do you have to use your tricks to harm me? To which she replies, you impudent red arse stableman. I went to considerable
Ooh,
effort to...
Bad horse plague!
I went to considerable effort to find a scripture pilgrim whom I carefully instructed to save your life. You should be thanking me. So Monkey complains about the band in his head and the torture he's facing with it. And Guanyin says it's the only way to make him behave himself. Which is not great.
Mm-hmm.
He blames her for sending this dragon here so that I could eat Tripitaka's horse. And the dragon refuses to come out now. So what the hell are they going to do?
He's having a sulk.
He is having a big sulk.
Well, he may also be scared shitless of what Guanyin's going to do to him now.
Yeah. She just, at this point, she just starts to ignore him and turns to the guardian and tells him to go to the stream and announce that she's here. So as soon as the guardian hears about Guanyin, he immediately comes out, turns into the form of a man, and thanks Guanyin again for saving his life.
Sweet.
He says, I've been waiting here a long time, but I've heard no news of the scripture pilgrim. And Guanyin points to Wukong and says, that's his disciple there. Bodhisattva, that's my adversary. I was hungry yesterday and ate his horse, and we've been fighting over it since. He never mentioned anything about scriptures. You didn't bother asking my name. How did you expect me to tell you anything? Hey, I asked you, what kind of monster are you and where did you come from? But all you did was shout, never mind where I come from, just return my horse.
I feel
It just devolves into this stupid little petty argument after all the big fight scene.
Just, you're not getting the horse back. You know, like you could have asked for payment for the horse, for a new horse. The horse is dead. The horse is gone, and we all have to live with it.
Guanyin says, when has that monkey ever given credit to other people? And she turns to Wukong himself and says, when you set off this time, remember that there are others who will join you. So when they ask you, by all means, mention the pilgrimage.
Oh, I'm guessing she's not. He's not happy with this.
he'll have another tantrum in a second, but for the moment, she goes to the Dragon Prince and she takes off the pearls hanging around his neck, and she uses her magic willow branch to cast a spell, turning him into a white horse, just like the one that he swallowed. And she promises, nice. She promises that acting as the horse when he completes the journey and the pilgrimage, he will receive a new golden immortal body.
Well, they just give out immortality like sweets here, don't they?
If you do what you're told.
Yeah.
So she's about to leave when Wukong has another outburst, saying he's not going to go on. The road to the west is too dangerous and he might die. And she chastises him again, and she says that when he was just a monkey, when he was young, he was so driven to seek enlightenment, he went across continents, and now he's just so lazy.
He's also like quintuple immortal now.
he's still worried about his health. I think imprisonment also kind of, I think he's a bit less self-assured and is kind of taking it out on other people. I mean, he's also being put through some blatantly awful shit here as well.
Yeah, this is true. This is true. I mean, I would also be fairly upset. I don't think he's quite worthy of the title Sun Wukarin again. He's got some grievances.
Yeah, so she says the truth of Nirvana can never be realized without faith and perseverance. But she still promises that on the journey, he can call on help from heaven if he needs it, or even from her in cases of extreme danger. And she takes three leaves from her willow branch and places them on the back of his head and turns them into three magic hairs. And she tells him if he's ever in a truly hopeless situation, he can use their power to save himself. And with all those reassurances, she leaves them again.
This is an important journey. This is kind of, I do sort of wonder if with all the resources they're pouring into it, would it not just be easier for them to pop over and get the stuff themselves?
Like, literally everyone here other than Tripitaka could just go there in, like, a second.
Yeah, can't monkey fly?
Yeah, but that's not the point. The suffering is the point, basically.
The suffering is the point,
he has to, it's a spiritual journey. He has to persevere through the hardships. It's about spiritual enlightenment, not just literally physically getting the scriptures. They spell this out very explicitly in other parts of the book.
Okay.
Like they do eventually bring up like the fact that Sun Wukong could just fly there. They don't bring that up here, but that does eventually actually come up.
Wait, does Tripitaka know that or not know that now, and then does he find out and lose his shit?
No,
I kinda wanna see that.
I'm not sure if he is kind of aware of that now, but I don't think he ever gets upset over that. I don't think that would be fun, but I don't think that happens. But I don't have
I'd love it if they were like a couple of hundred miles away from the destination and Tripitaka just kind of dropped an ampule of water and he's going like, oh, that was my favorite. pottery that I bought from that lovely couple, and Sun Wukong goes, it's only a couple of miles back, and he kind of jumps up and flies and flies back and kind of then goes, what are you looking at me like that for? You can fly. Yeah.
So anyway, they they go on the they get ready to go on the move again, riding bareback on the new magic dragon horse, because nice. He ate the saddle and they didn't get a replacement.
Yeah.
Pity. They don't have a way for Tripitaka to cross the river, but Wukong figures that the dragon horse could probably swim. He's a dragon. He lived in this river for like a year. It's fine. They don't need to though. Because when they get back to the water's edge, they spot a fisherman pulling a raft downstream, and they hail him. He helps them cross, and Tripitaka tries to offer him some money, but he refuses it and just shoves off again. And Monkey says to Tripitaka he doesn't need to be so conscientious. He says, "Don't you recognize him? He's the water god of this stream. Since he didn't come to pay his respects to me, he was about to get a beating, but being spared that is payment enough for him." So Tripitaka doesn't really know how to take this. He only half believes it, but he doesn't voice any objection and just stay silent as they carry on.
Okay.
Yeah. It's kind of something of no consequence, of just like a little character moment of Wukong just being like, "Oh yeah, that's the local god. I was going to beat the shit out of him, but let's leave him off." Yeah. It's weird.
you gotta wonder what Tripitaka is making of it all. Is he sleeping okay? I feel like he's probably not sleeping okay.
I mean, Sun Wukong has already tried to kill him, so
yeah,
it's you'd want to be watching your back.
Yeah, poor guy. I hope he gets lots of fruit or whatever he likes. I don't know, he's a monk. I don't know what monk's versions of, like chocolate ice cream or whatever is. I just wish him comfort. Ask if there are any monks.
any Buddhist monks who are fans of this show want to tell us what you do for fun.
First of all, also, if there are, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, that's probably warranted.
I'm really, really sorry. I'm not sorry enough to stop, but I am really sorry.
So as it's getting dark, they come across a temple on the road called the Lishi Shrine. And they meet an old man there, and they ask to stay the night. And Tripitaka and the old man chat about local customs. Sun Wukong notices an empty clothesline hanging on the eaves and decides to pull it down to tie the horse up with, just without asking or anything. So the old man sees this and he starts laughing and he asks, "Oh, where'd you steal that horse?" Wukong gets really pissed at this and shouts back that they're holy monks in a pilgrimage. How could they possibly be horse thieves? The old man says, "If you didn't steal it, why is there no saddle, and why'd you have to tear down my clothesline to tie it up?"
Because a dragon ate it.
Yeah, Tripitaka gives out to Monkey for just tearing down the clothesline without asking, and then he tries to explain the whole shit with the dragon to the man. The old man just says, "Don't worry, an old man like me loves to tease, but I had no idea your disciple was so serious about everything."
He's a touchy boy.
He is.
Is our Sun Wukong. He
says when he was young he used to love riding, but he's fallen on hard times, and he lives now just as the caretaker for the shrine. And he offers them his old saddle and gear that he's held on to. So they spend the night there, and in the morning, as soon as they wake up, Sun Wukong, the first thing he makes sure is to remind Tripitaka that the old man offered them a saddle and they should, go get it.
And he's barely done talking when your man actually just arrives into the room with the saddle and all the accoutrement. It's all extremely fancy. The saddle is studded with silver stars and sewn with gold thread. The reins are made of purple silk. The bridle straps are shaped like flowers. The rings are made of good steel, and it's decorated with gold etchings of animals. And the whip is made from tiger ligaments, which is
sure. Apparently that
maybe that's a good material for making whips from. I don't know.
So, you know, moral of the story, if you find an old man who loves to tease, particularly about how much he's missed riding, you can be guaranteed that he just has some fabulous leather gear.
After they accept everything, the old man and the shrine suddenly disappear, and a voice calls out from the sky, and it identifies itself as the spirit of the Potalaka Mountain. And guess who sent it?
Was it Guanyin?
It was, yeah, Guanyin just sent him along to present them with like some riding gear for the horse. And it tells them to press on with diligence before leaving.
Sweet.
Tripitaka, do you want to guess what his reaction is?
Is he shit scared?
He falls off his horse.
Ah, there we go, I missed that.
He falls off his horse in shock, and he starts bowing to the sky and giving thanks. Monkey just laughs at him for this and pulls him up and says, "Master, get up, he's long gone, he can't hear you." And Tripitaka asks him why he just laughed rather than show any respect. So Monkey thinks instead of bowing, the spirit deserved a beating for playing a game with them like that. Which has really become his answer to everything. But, you know, he said, "Oh, I'll spare him for Guanyin's sake." And he says, "Old Monkey has been a hero since his youth. He doesn't know how to bow to people. He claims he's never bowed to anyone, even to the Jade Emperor or Laozi," which is not true. He in fact did bow to the Jade Emperor, but Tripitaka calls this blasphemy and says they should stop talking and just get going again. Tripitaka is just kind of left speechless by all this. He doesn't really know how to call Wukong up on things. He just kind of stops talking and tells them to go again every time.
I feel like calling Sun Wukong out is just a waste of your energy. It's just, you know, you gotta pick your battles.
After that, they carry on peacefully on the road for 2 months without incident. The book mentions along the way they meet with... So the book mentions on the way, on the road, all they met were barbarians, Muslims, tigers, wolves, and leopards, which is an odd sentence and an odd group of things to throw all in together.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what barbarians is a translation of in the context here. I imagine maybe people who don't speak the official like Chinese dialect of the time. I don't know. But yeah, I think this is the only mention of like Islam in the entire novel that I remember, at least. It's just an odd thing thrown in there.
Yeah, it's not great.
No, but... But I thought I'd bring it up just to highlight it. But yeah, it's kind of unfortunate. Then one day in early spring, they come across the Guanyin Chan Hall Temple and decide to stay the night. So they cannot get away from her.
No, I don't think anyone can. I think if she set your sight upon you, you're fucked in some way. Either you were fucked before she got there, or you're about to be very fucked.
I don't have any footnotes or anything, so if there's anything you want to chat about before we go, we can just sign off.
Two things. I don't know if anyone listening to this was anywhere near Kalaini Beach on Sunday, September 20th, but I have found a small toy cow. If you own it, please message me. I don't know. If I had I know I had a little stuffed goat that I would have been really upset if something happened to when I was like four. So,
that's, you know, fair.
If you own it, just let me know. Also, I will be starting a new show on Hysteria Ireland soon called Mole Hills to Die On. And that is where I get people to argue about really, really petty shit for my amusement.
Nice. Do you have any topic examples?
The sandwich toaster is one of the most, if not the most, underappreciated small appliances, and anyone who disagrees deserves to have their hand shoved in one. Was a suggestion.
Do you have any strong opinions on the use of George Foreman grills as sandwich toasters?
Well, I try not to think or even speak of such things because, you know, I like to not go on in a murderous frenzy. It can be any topic. We're going to get people to, if you follow the page, we're going to get people to send in their own personal molehills to die on.
Yeah.
Just little, tiny little things that mean nothing to anyone really, but that you will argue to the death. I firmly believe that everyone has one.
Oh, I'm sure I have tons, but I can't think off the top of my head.
Something to do with Linux.
tab indentation. You should use tabs, not spaces.
In
code indentation.
Well, if you don't, you're a psychopath.
spaces mean something else. Tabs. There's typographic meaning to the different characters.
Yeah, well, even if you're talking about a page of text, if you're just using the space for indentation, then how many spaces are you using? And it looks different with every font you're using. Mm. And then, you know, when you go back to edit it, the tab button is right there. It's right there.
I didn't expect to get that much of a reaction from you out of it, because this is something I was bringing up in the context of like Python coding.
I'll be honest, Cleva, that this may be my I've dropped a coffee mug moment.
So this is a preview of that show, I guess.
We can have you on and we'll talk all about indentation.
We'll need to get someone who disagrees, though, surely.
Yeah, where will we find such a
heinous person?
Such a warped soul. The point is, people will send in their own personal molehills, and comedians will have to argue about them in a funny way. So, get excited for that.
Okay, thank you for listening, and we will find out next time what actually happens in the Guanyin Chan Hall Temple.
Yay!
Bye 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 bye.
Fuck.
Fuck?
What? Sign off. Anyway, we're signed off.
Bye.
Yeah?